Good afternoon. My name is Kirk, and I will be your conference operator. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the webinar, Enhancing Your Student Retention Initiatives with Predictive Modeling. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Beth Richter with Noelle Levitz.
Oh, thank you, Kirk, and good afternoon, everyone. From my post in Iowa City and on behalf of Noelle Levitz, I'd like to welcome each of you to our webinar on the theme Enhancing Your Student Retention Initiatives with Predictive Modeling. In today's forum, we have representation from a wide variety of two-year and four-year public and private colleges and universities, and we see a wide variety of positions represented, including retention coordinators, directors of first-year experience and advising, vice presidents of academic affairs and student affairs, as well as enrollment management, and directors of institutional research, to name just a few. As we continue the call, we'll do our best to provide relevant content to each of you. Collaborating in this venture today is my colleague Dr. Lou Sanborn, Associate Vice President of Consulting Services, as well as our two featured speakers, Katherine Johnson and Katherine Clark, both of Clarkson University in upstate New York. And you won't be surprised to see our full agenda, as we provide an overview of the value of predictive modeling, followed by a discussion of early intervention initiatives, as well as a variety of scenarios from two-year and four-year colleges and universities that utilize predictive modeling for retention to focus and inform their outreach initiatives. At Noelle Levitz, we continue to emphasize early intervention, as we're just struck by this data. If you look on the left, on the one hand, referencing over 103,000 records nationally from students who completed the College Student Inventory Form B in 2012, approximately 95% of incoming students indicate they have a very strong desire to continue their education and are quite determined to finish their degrees. However, over on the right, citing ACT's data on students' actual attainment of their degrees, we see a steep contrast, and this juxtaposition speaks to the unrealized potential of students who were not able to realize their initial academic aspirations. Clearly, it also speaks to the challenge before each of us to sustain this initial momentum and motivation of the incoming class through the duration to graduation. A good number of you on today's call already administer the College Student Inventory with impressive initiatives for proactive assessment and intervention the first few weeks of the term as you learn the strengths and needs of the incoming class while connecting them with key services in academic support, personal counseling, social enrichment, financial guidance, and career counseling. If you're looking to further your first to second year retention rate, and if you've not yet added the post-test, I do suggest taking a closer look at the mid-year student assessment. You may also want to join other colleagues administering the second year student assessment to strengthen your holding power before students leave for summer break. In your use of these assessments, many of you are already making use of the efficiencies available to you through the accompanying Retention Data Center, which includes customizing features as well as filters that allow you to readily reach out to students in key areas of support, adding feasibility and timeliness to your outreach initiatives. Despite the rigors that are underway on each of your campuses, it's still not uncommon for me to receive calls, though, from campus colleagues who seek to attain yet more results from their efforts to date. And I think we're all in that boat. This begs the question of what more can be done to influence student success and retention on our respective campuses. After all, the stakes have perhaps never been higher. If retention and college completion rates are not improved, then oftentimes budgets, tuition revenue, and even accreditation can be at risk. Further, as a nation, we believe that education is the key to our ongoing vitality. Indeed, our jobs depend upon our ability to prove that we're making a difference in the lives of our students and the colleges or universities that we serve. So as we continue in today's call, we're reminded that this Retention Management System Plus suite of services is designed to support college completion initiatives through earlier and more focused intervention. And this suite includes a rich array of analytics, the assessment tools you're using already, as well as the data dashboard that you've become familiar with. And the purpose of this suite of services is to tip the balance against risk factors and towards support, persistence, and college completion through earlier and ongoing assessment and intervention. Today's focus, of course, will be the student retention predictor. With this student retention predictor, members of the CSI community have discovered how they can pinpoint students' needs and prioritize interventions with even more precision, thus making optimal use of limited resources in their service to students. Thus, within this context, predictive modeling has served as an extra advantage that makes the difference in student success during these especially tight times. What I especially like is that the campus-specific likelihood of retention score in this student retention predictor for each and every student appears directly on the CSI report. In the place where you had previously seen the dropout proneness score, you'll now see an individual likelihood of retention score that's campus-specific. So it's the same concept of early intervention, but with even more precision for your campus in particular. At this point, I'd like to ask my colleague, Dr. Lou Sanborn, to continue the conversation with his expertise on the value of predictive modeling for adding focus and precision to outreach initiatives. Lou?
Thanks, Beth. Really appreciate that great introduction and want to add my welcome to all of you. It's great to see so many participants from so many different kinds of institutions. What I want to do before we introduce our wonderful case study from Clarkson University is talk a little bit about the power of predictive modeling and how we can add that to the college student inventory suite of surveys. This introductory slide kind of gives you a broad sense of our approach. We start when we build a predictive model for retention for each campus to use your own institutional data to determine traits and to build that predictive model. So every predictive model that we build for every campus is different. And often we actually build multiple models until we find the right one. And on many campuses, we build multiple models for different student populations. So if you're at a two-year institution, we might build a model for transfer students and a different model for students in vocational programs. At four-year institutions, we might build one model for first-year students and a different model for transfers. But in each case, that's institutional data we use to build the model. The second step is to help you prioritize your retention strategies then based on what we learn about the risk factors that are unique to your student populations. So at step two, we get a broad cohort-based set of information. There at level three, we then score individual students. So not only do we have the cohort-level information, we have information that, as Beth noted earlier, complements the data that you have on the college student inventory. Most of our campuses then use that data as the basis for a comprehensive communication flow to continuing students. We've learned a lot in the last several decades about the importance of scientifically designed communication flows on the recruitment side of the enrollment management project, but it seems to be in the last 5 years or so that we've really focused our communication on continuing students. With all the data available in the data center then, in each spring and fall, we will continue to assess actual retention outcomes compared to those that were predicted. And if you've developed interventions based on strategies unique to your population, we actually expect to see some significant changes and improvements for specific populations. So at the end of the cycle, we know which strategies were effective. You know where you should continue to focus your efforts. And importantly, in this time of diminishing resources on most campuses, you can take a look at what's not as effective as you'd like it to be and redirect efforts and resources from those places to others. If you get nothing from the 15 or so slides that I'm going to share with you before I turn this over to the two Catherines, I want you to remember this particular slide. Amazingly, in higher education, we spent most of our effort on retention initiatives in this A group and in this B group, those students at the ends of the curves, one of which will leave really no matter what you do on your campus, and those who are going to stay no matter what you do. We build developmental programs and serious outreach programs for those most at-risk students. And because it's a smaller proportion of our population, even if we have a significant influence on that small group, we're not likely to move institutional averages. Likewise with honors programs and those programs that we build for the students who distinguish themselves at the B point of the curve. What the student retention predictor really allows us to do is focus here under the meat of the curve to support students who don't distinguish themselves quite so much either in our preliminary data analysis or in the classroom. So this allows us to identify students with two or three risk factors, where if we could ameliorate the impact of one risk factor, we could have a significant impact on those students' likelihood of succeeding at our institution and continuing their enrollment through degree completion. When we build the predictive model for you, we take data from your own admissions, financial aid, your outcomes data, persistence and retention, and other enrolled student data. We obviously have a standard list of data fields that we like to collect, but we also have a number of institution-specific fields. As I mentioned before, if you're at a two-year campus, we want to identify what kind of programs your students are in, whether they're career or vocational, adult, basic education, or transfer programs. We want to, on many four-year campuses, or even two-year campuses that have athletic programs, even though it's not a standard data collection, we want to know what kind of extracurricular activities, co-curricular activities your students are involved in to see if those things are unique on your campus. So while there's a standard data collection protocol, we also customize those data fields to make sure we're collecting all the right data for you. We supplement that internal campus-specific data with geodemographic data at the ZIP plus 4 level. So we work and collect 70 personics cluster definitions, 21 life stage groups, the relevant groups for each of your students. We look at household income level, which is actually an appended data field, which on many campuses is actually more predictive than the actual FAFSA income data that we see reported. So it's interesting how on a lot of campuses, neighborhood information and those geodemographic clusters can be more influential than some of the single variables that come in from our institutions. Distance from campus is a common variable, and if you're on a multi-campus system, then we can measure those distance from campuses so that's unique for different students in different contexts. So it's a very robust data collection process. We have a person we call a technical product support specialist who works with the data people on your campus to transmit that data and make sure it's clean, and then we turn that data over to one of our statisticians who spends his or her career time on building these predictive models and helping us identify the characteristics that are unique to your student populations that predict retention. And like most variables, there's a continuum. There are strength zones in that continuum and challenge zones in that continuum. This is a very typical sort of predictive model output that we would see once the model is built. You can see that there are five variables. High school GPA accounts for 28.5% of the variation. That's very common. Most campuses have at least one academic variable that's predictive of retention. Days of applicant on this campus, 23+% of the variation. Commonly, the students who apply the farthest in advance are the most prepared, often have the greatest support networks. They are most likely to retain. Students who enter the process late, often the first to leave. There's that household income variable. I don't think I've ever seen a predictive model without a financial variable, at least one. Some campuses will have two variables in these categories, but I will also assure you that our statisticians make sure that we don't have high levels of covariance across related variables. Residency status on this campus is an on-campus versus in-state versus out-of-state. We will define residency status and all these variables in ways that are appropriate for your campus. And then the variable with the least influence in this particular campus's model is academic major, a very common major to see. I think your experience on most of your campuses, you probably have a good sense of which major students are more likely to be successful and least likely. This is often a very powerful variable for us, but also one we have to be cautious with when we work on campuses because it's often the most politically charged variable. In addition to just knowing which factors contribute to the model, we also need to know what the risk thresholds are. So on this campus, you can see the listing of the model variable on this table, model variable, how we categorize those variables, and then the risk thresholds. This campus, high school GPA, 3.08 or below. Students who apply less than 214 days. The interesting thing about family income, household income on this particular model is that we have a linear relationship, And I will caution you here that many of these variables are not necessarily linear, financial variables in particular. We often see students who are the most wealthy, highly likely to stay, and most at risk for leaving. Students with high need, often highly likely to stay and highly at risk, depending on how those clusters are. So in the current economic climate, it's not uncommon to see students in the middle who are actually most at risk because they don't have large enough financial aid packages and their families are not sufficiently affluent. And then over here in the far right column, you can see of the students with that particular risk factor, their retention rates for this campus. So the most influential risk factor in the negative way is days as applicant. The most affirming risk factor is academic major. And obviously those are unique for each campus. This is one of the testing tables that we use. As you would expect, the number of risk factors is in a linear relationship with the retention rate and the average model scores. So I'll talk a moment later about how those model scores work for each individual student. Actually, let me go back. Each student will then have a model score on a scale of 0 to 1, which is basically a probability factor. So we know the average model scores for the students in that group, 1 most likely to stay, 0 most likely to attrit from your campus. For each variable, not just those in the model, but actually for virtually every variable that we experiment with in the model, you will see variable diagnostic tables. This variable diagnostic table is from a different campus. It actually shows the retention rates based on high school rank. For this campus, high school rank was more predictive, actually, than GPA. And you can see there that students with a rank of 81 or higher retained at the highest rate, 82%. Students from the bottom half of their high school graduating classes retained at the lowest rate. Not uncommon for us to see missing variables in every case. Those could be homeschool students. Those could be students from small high schools that do not rank because they don't have enough students in their classes. But I will also tell you that this data process, the data collection process, often helps us help campuses improve their data collection processes and clean the data. As I mentioned a moment ago, each student then in your incoming cohort will be scored based on the historical model that we have built. And again, scores range from 0 to 1, most likely to retain at 1, least likely to retain down there at 0. This allows us to think strategically both about the cohort and the individual and to develop intervention strategies for groups in between. So we have lots of campuses who are collecting residence hall data both in the predictive model, and then we're indicating that as special groups in the data center so that we can sort, we can study students based on the residence halls they are. Campuses are influencing programming. Similar, we can focus efforts on particular academic majors. We can know the characteristics of first-year experience sections or groups of advisors. So it allows us at multiple levels to focus our outreach and our interventions. The sample distribution for an incoming class, you can see a nice normal distribution here. Small numbers of students at the tails of the distribution, less than 0.25, higher than 0.75, and students in the middle, which is where we really want to focus the majority of our efforts. We often work with campuses then to convert that distribution information to a priority system. So those students in the middle range, those largest groups of students on this campus, 274 students with model scores between 0.36 and 0.65, who are most likely to be able to influence if we can ameliorate the impact of their variabilities. The beauty that many of you have, because you're already using the college student inventory, is then we can layer on receptivity to assistance and desire to transfer so that we can further streamline our communication flow, reach out more to those students who are receptive to assistance, and not pester so much the students who are not, although obviously we're not going to ignore them because we know some of those students will still be open to our interventions. From that, we'll help you build a communication flow. And one of the beauties of the Student Retention Predictor in Noel Levitz is that we have existing relationships that have allowed us to build data bridges with both Hobson's Retain and Starfish. So if you're using either of those CRMs, we can directly integrate this individual risk factor data into the CRM to help you build that communication flow. On many campuses, you'll see this sort of a high-priority group where we will build a comm flow with a certain number of communication outreach efforts from each of particular offices. What we may do down here with mid-level priority groups is actually distinguish. So students who have, if major's a risk factor on your campus, we might increase the number of advising and degree planning outreach while we reduce the number of financial aid counseling contacts if those students don't have financial risk factors. So within our communication flow, we can help you customize outreach and think about how you're connecting with students who need support. Same sort of methodology works, as I suggested earlier. If you've got a professional advising system, we can help you. We'll enter advisors in that in the data center, as you already probably do for the college student inventory, and structure outreach, help your advisors know who's at risk and at what level on your campus. Same thing with first-year experience courses or seminars. We can customize these outreach groups that make sense for you and your campus. I'm going to be back after the two Catherines present their case study from Clarkson University with some additional case study information. And well, now it's my pleasure to introduce the two Catherines. They've got a great program at Clarkson that has really benefited from very thoughtful interpretation of the student retention predictor and very deliberate intervention. So, Catherines.
Hello, everyone. And thank you, Lou, for that great introduction. This afternoon, I'm going to take the introductory and end part of the presentation, and my colleague Kathy Clark will talk to you about the specific initiatives. But moving along to the location of Clarkson, Beth mentioned upstate New York. Some of you, by definition, would call us the North Country. If you know New York State, we're actually beyond upstate in a very small college town, rural college town, called Potsdam, about 2.5 hours north of our friends from Syracuse University, who I think are on the phone today. Brief description, and you'll notice the title of the slide is called N equals 1, and we sometimes think of ourselves as being an N of 1 because we're one of the only rural schools that are primarily engineering and business and sciences. Although today, as Kathy talks to you about our initiatives, I would say that what we do and how we're driven through this process very much could be applied to any institution. We're private. We're, as I mentioned, rural, research-driven. You can see our numbers. We're very small, undergrads, grad students, and then our breakdown by percentages. Now, our retention problem, and we put the word problem in quotes because at the time, really, we were looking at retention in the context of our peer institutions, which would be the American Independent Technical Universities Group. And we wanted to rethink what retention really meant to us and revisit our retention goals and strategies. At the time we started this process in 2009, we had been actually going down in retention, and we'd gotten to 86%. And we wanted to put that back in the other direction. And through the initiatives you'll see in just a few minutes, we have raised that level up to 88%, and our goal is to be at 90% or better by 2014. I am also chair of our University Retention Committee, and when we first started working with Noel Levitz, their consultant came to campus and we had a retreat. It was a very comprehensive initiative over a couple of days with our retention committee of 18 members, advisors, department chairs, deans, provosts, and even the student affairs leaders. The retreat, we had a lot of conclusions, but the primary conclusions are listed here, that our students were not as engaged as we thought they were. We were, truth in advertising, and we feel our students are engaged, but there was more we could have done. And we found out that our high-tech students wanted high touch, and very much like our School of Business model. And we had too many advising models across our campus. And lastly, we really learned that early intervention was absolutely going to be necessary in order for us to have any impact on that first-year student success. Today, I'm just going to have my colleague Kathy is going to talk about our curricular design that fosters first-year student success and intervention strategies for at-risk students. You can see there are four major priorities that came out of in our action plans from our retention retreat. But today, again, we're just going to focus on these two that are particularly tied to the predictive data that we had. And now I'll pass it on to Kathy Clark.
Thank you, Catherine. Clarkson moved forward with making curricular changes by forming the first year council. The purpose was to address academic issues that impacted retention of our first year students in the STEM disciplines, which represented about 85% of our incoming class. The roots of this council can be traced back to retention studies by Noel Levitz and research conducted by our first year physics director. Three of the major factors impacting student persistence identified by Noel Levitz were the Clarkson Mathematics Readiness Test, which is given in the summer, our students' math SAT scores, and our students' high school GPA. Those students entering in the engineering field entered their first year taking the exact same courses. In the first semester, they were to take Calculus 1, Chemistry 1, Physics 1, and then Clarkson Seminar. And as you can remember what our predictive indicators were, if you were underprepared in math, then three out of these four courses would be very challenging for student success in the first year. Again, here shows our predictive model output, the top three risk factors, which is on our dashboard, and advisors, Student Success Center, many campus staff and administrators have access to this, and I'll get to that later on in our presentation. With that data and our information from the research that was conducted by the physics department, we were able to take a look at, and very strategically take a look at all those incoming students to see if that one size, did it fit all for them, and clearly it doesn't. There were a couple changes that were made. One was a co-calculus class where in previously students would fail into it once if they did not pass a math test, and we changed that with the help of Noel Levitz just looking at it differently. We're mandating all students to take the class, and then once they passed, they could then drop the class. And so removing those psychological barriers of punishment and also the just replacing or the positive message. Based on their two incoming exams that we asked the students to take in the summertime, one is an FCI, a Forced Concepts Inventory, which is a physics readiness test, and the second being our pre-calculus placement exam. If student did well on the physics, they would be labeled as a physics plus or a physics minus. If they did well on the math, it would be a plus or a minus. For students that received an P minus and an M minus score, they were put into a treatment group where physics would be delayed by one semester. That semester, the first semester, would be replaced by engineering and society course, which is a more hands-on design project-based course. As you can see here, the new structure allows for delaying physics by semester, giving the student a full semester of really getting a much better handle on the calculus, the math, and not having to also juggle a calculus-based physics course at the same time. So this structure definitely allowed for students to strengthen their math skills in order to have a much better chance of success. In this slide, we see our results from that treatment group. As you can see, the number or the percentage of students that were dismissed after the first semester dramatically decreased, almost by half. That the green indicates all students and the yellow indicates the engineering students. So actually the engineering students, you see a great from almost a little over 9% to just under 3% drop. As we look forward to the incoming class, some retention strategies that we are now going to look at, but also just to highlight a few that are underway and that we're still conducting. First, we're excited to run the new student retention predictor model this summer. Now that the math underpreparedness has been addressed and we're seeing great results with that, we're very excited to run a new model to see then what new risk factors may surface. The next intervention strategy that I'm going to talk about is our CU Connect program, which this illustrates how we've integrated the CSI and our student retention predictor data across the university. And then lastly, just an ongoing Project Success, which is an academic recovery course, which again was highlighted by Noel Levitz during our retreat, that when students were academically dismissed but allowed to continue, we needed some intervention and recovery plan for them. We currently have a class that is mandated for those students, and we are seeing great success. In the past, 25% of the students who were continued graduated. Now with the course in its third year running, we see a success rate of 50% of persistence. The CU Connect program. This is a program that we designed to address, again, that early intervention and targeting students very early on in their college transition. We utilize the CSI, and we ask that every student complete the CSI. We use that as a first-year seminar assignment. And then a staff mentor is assigned to every single first-year student. It takes a village. We have anywhere between 725 to some years 800 incoming students, and every single student is assigned a mentor, and that mentor is to meet with the student in the first few weeks of classes. As you can see, our numbers grow in terms of the volunteers and the location of where our volunteers come from. Every office is represented on campus, everyone from our athletics department, admissions, to alumni and philanthropy. Now faculty are getting on board, as well as advisors and some graduate students as well. The steps of our CU Connect, within the first few weeks of classes, they are to mentors meet and connect with their students. They meet with them one-on-one, build rapport, and then also review their CSI report, discuss what those strengths and challenges are, and then also develop an action plan in terms of what the student will do to use their strengths and also address and get connected with any resources on campus that they feel they should. Mid-semester, we ask that the mentors reconnect again and support their students in their ongoing transition to their first year of college. And then lastly, towards the end of the semester, they reach out and kind of wrap up this semester and close with wishing them good luck on their finals and that they're here next semester should they need each other. How we use our student retention predictor, there's three critical ways that we use them. We prioritize our outreach. The mentors utilize that SRP to determine how many contacts. I gave you a rough the template of a traditional number of contacts. However, if a mentor has a student with a low SRP score, which we've determined at 0.44, they will increase those number of contacts. Also, the department chairs and our associate deans in each school has access to the CSI and the dashboard, and they're able to take a look at those risk scores and meet with the advisors in their departments so that their advisors can reach out and meet with students prior to course enrollment. Our next steps, as we look forward to our incoming class for this fall, we're actually going to ask our students to take the CSI in the summer. And as I mentioned, we will be running a new model, predictive model. And with a new SRP score for our students, we are looking to make more strategic mentor assignments. Currently, right now, it's done actually very randomly. And so we can be more strategic, having that information very early on, and also have our mentors reach out and welcome our new incoming students to the Clarkson family in the summertime, so prior to the first day of enrollment. A case study that illustrates how we use the retention index score as well as the CSI and our mentoring program. This was a student whose index score was 0.55. She self-reported that she had low scores in general coping, but she also had a high receptivity to personal counseling. her mentor just happened to be our dean of students, and in that first semester he met her within the first few weeks of class, and already at that point she was undergoing some personal stress. He met with her quite a bit throughout that first semester, again, increasing the number of contacts. She finished in that semester with a 2.7 GPA. In the second semester, at that point, she was connected with several resources, including the Student Success Center, in working during the second semester. However, her personal struggles really began to interfere, and knowing that she also had a high family emotional support, we encouraged the family to become part of the discussion in helping her. In that second semester, she withdrew, but we met with the family and our office and the student and developed a plan for her to return. During the fall, this past fall, she re-enrolled, she changed her major, and she finished the fall semester with a 3.6 GPA. And this spring, in meeting with her, she had all S's at midterm and reports that she's very happy. She has a great big smile on her face. So we really do look to this student as a success story that she's doing beautifully and planning to graduate from Clarkson. Catherine?
Thanks, Kathy. Kathy has already showed many of the successes that we've had through these initiatives. I'm going to share some broader data with you on one of the measures we have is on the supportive campus environment. And if you can see, I want to focus specifically on the first-year students. But as when we implemented the mentor program, we were kind of on this 61, 62, up to 64, and we made this giant shot up at really 4% for Clarkson on this is very high, and it is an institutional goal to raise our engagement level of our students. So they really feel very supported in that first year. So that was a, again, demonstrated results. The other thing I want to do is point out to you now, there's two slides that are going to come up here. The first one is our first semester to second semester retention. And I think a lot of us, and myself included, as well as the retention committee, were only focusing on first to second year. And it was very revealing to us to look at the first semester to second semester retention rates, and that we were budgeting at the institution to lose 5 to 6% of our students after the first semester, and we were riding on those stats. And as Kathy's initiatives that she's explained today really have impacted that, it's a slow process because there's other factors that are going into it. And I will mention that in the fall of 2011, we had a class of 800 first-year students. We normally have around 700 to 725. That did give us a little blip, but then we popped back up again in 2012. Our goal is to get that to about a 3 to 4%. We were very close at 96% in 2010 and almost there again in 2012. So we're really closing that gap on that first to second semester. The next slide shows the retention rates that we all work with, which is the first year to second year retention rates. And again, that 2011 cohort is, we just got the data in this fall. That was that large class. We expected a bit of a blip on the data. We expect that to pop back up again when we have what we call our normal size class. You can see we were riding nicely up towards our goal of 90% or better. Some additional positive outcomes from using the retention predictor and our related initiatives, we really are delivering on our message now. We really feel that we have that high-touch climate. We talked about a utopia back in our retention planning days, and that utopia was to have every student have that have a point of contact. They now do. The curricular impact to foster persistence and progression that Kathy talked about, and having everyone across the entire academic corridor involved in working on changing the curriculum to foster that persistence and progression. And taking that campus-wide approach, and what I've learned from this is that everyone needs to be engaged in the process, and they were very eager to, and that's why I think we have the success we have. And lastly, I'll close on everyone was engaged, even our president. I think it's interesting for you to know out there that he takes one or two mentees every year as well. And now I'll pass it back to Lou.
Lou?
It helps if I unmute my phone. So Thanks for that great case study. What I wanted to do is share a couple of additional case studies with you from different institutional types. I want to start with a four-year public regional comprehensive institution. And what I'm going to do is show you a series of variable diagnostic tables that identified risk factors, and then talk a little bit about how those campuses built interventions based on what they learned through the predictive modeling process, and then where we have them, because we've done this long enough ago to have retention outcomes. We'll share some of those outcomes with you. One of the concerns on this particular four-year campus was date of application. And as you can see here from this variable diagnostic table, that orange band at the bottom, students who applied 174 days or fewer were actually retaining a good 9% below the institutional average. But that information wasn't really good enough for this campus. They wanted to say, well, let's create additional detail. And this is a common part of the process. We'll see something at that variable diagnostic table with bend variables, and then we'll be able to say, well, let's take a look a little more closely. You can see pretty shocking here, students who applied August 1st or later, only one of six in this particular year's course, 16.7% rate. This campus was then able, based on that data, to be able to create a hard July 30th application deadline. Their philosophy had always been rolling admissions. They continue to do rolling admissions, but they moved that deadline to July 30th. And actually, for 2013, they're moving it to June 20th. They're taking another 10 days off. Because it's not just the six students who matriculate who are taking a tremendous amount of work in the admissions, recruitment, financial aid, housing, offices, advising. It's the students who apply in that period and then don't matriculate. So the work has been really significant for them. Outcomes on this campus is obviously an improved cohort profile. Those late admits historically had lower academic profiles. So they're actually using the data from the predictive model to help feedback their considerations for admissions policy decisions. This is also happens to be a class rank school, and they are gradually, because they had some growth in their first year classes, they're actually raising their admissions profile. Staff morale, for reasons I mentioned a moment ago, is so much better across campus because folks are now able to put their effort into students who've already taken care of all the things they need to take care of. A really interesting side benefit is the perceptions of the faculty. We did some focus group work with this campus in the fall, and generally the faculty are actually reporting perceptions that are beyond the actual improvements, numerical improvements, and the quality of the class. So having the faculty on board is so important to the success of these initiatives. And we're anticipating a retention increase. You can see across the bottom of the slide here the historical on this campus. That 67.3 in 2011 is a good point ahead of our 2010 cohort, not quite to where we were in 2009, but this campus is quite confident, partly because of the persistence data that Kathy was talking about earlier on this campus has improved, and so they see really great things in the future. We worked with a two-year public institution that took a very different approach, and at this campus actually had a very complex predictive model, way more variables than most of the four-year institutions that we look at. But one of the things that jumped out to the team on this campus was the 10% lower retention of part-time students, compared to full-time students, this line right here. And then concerns about students who'd been out of school for a while. The older students up here retained at a decent rate for this campus above their institutional averages. And those students who are 18, right out of high school, retained at the best rate of all. But these students in the middle, they were concerned about. And not surprisingly, there was a high level of overlap between this category and this category. Now, if you work at a two-year campus, you know that phenomenon called car class car, and so opportunities for outreach are limited. This campus, in conjunction with their consultant, decided that they would adopt a learning community approach, which is really pretty simple. It was paired courses, so students who were registered for one class were automatically registered for the other class. Academic support was then able to be delivered directly to the class. There were some different advising interventions. The faculty worked together to coordinate and collaborate on course outlines and plans so that students saw a connection outcomes for this campus have been really pretty wonderful. Academic performance high by as measured by GPA, higher for students who participate in learning community sections than those who don't. Higher first to second term persistence compared to students who have similar risk factors but are not participating. But perhaps most important is the increased buy-in for retention initiatives. When we take a data-informed approach to intervention planning, and then we can measure the outcomes based on those interventions, folks get a little excited about the potential and think about what they can do if they have better information to support their students. I want to share a couple more for your private case studies. I mean, I'll be fairly quick with this because I want to leave some time for questions. This is another four-year campus that had a quantitative readiness concern, much like Clarkson University, although very different. Institution was not as selective, didn't have the same kind of stellar SAT scores to start with. But here you can see in the variable diagnostic table that students with 20 or less on the math ACT were retaining 14 percentage points below the institutional average. This campus did not have a good entering math sequence. Every student went directly to the full general education math, depending on their major. There was no pre-screening to see if students were ready for that. So the two big changes on this campus were the development of a couple of still college level, but preparatory math classes before the required quantitative course in the major, and obviously a math placement test to help identify which students needed that. What you're going to see on the next slide is that the math ACT completely changed the model. It dropped out of the model 2 years later. There were overall retention improvements. And again, on this campus, the math faculty had been frustrated for years but had not been able to make the case that they needed some additional curricular resources. And so now with the data, they were able to do that. Math faculty were much happier. And then the faculty and the majors were much happier, too, because now their students weren't getting hung up by quantitative requirements. You can see the before and after here on the ACT math variable diagnostic tables, where 2 years later, the average retention rate was up almost 2.5 points on campus. Across the board, retention rates were higher in each of those bend categories, so really positive outcomes there. And then the last campus I want to show you is another four-year private. There are a couple of things that surprised this campus when we built the predictive model. The first is the incredible importance of the campus visit. And most of you at four-year and even two-year institutions know that students who visit your campus are much more likely to matriculate. But they were surprised that students who visited campus were also then much more likely to be retained in the second year. And then this really strange finding here is that female students were much more at risk for retention than male students, which is the inverse on lots of campuses. Now, we just built this predictive model for this campus about a year ago, so we don't have good outcomes for you. But I can show you that they have been incredibly aggressive in revising their approach to interventions and outreach to campus. I'm not going to read this list for you, but you can see in particular, because of the two variable diagnostic tables I showed you before, they're significantly changing their outreach to female freshmen in particular, those who have multiple risk flags and don't already have a connection to some sort of campus organization, whether that's athletics or employment. And then one of my favorite topics is they're really focusing on on-campus employment, so they're really working with supervisors. So some really exciting things going on every campus that I've worked with the predictive modeling for retention. The additional data really tends to energize the campus, brings people behind their retention initiatives, and the good news is we tend to see quantitative results. Steps in the process, I hinted at all of these things already. We start with a data readiness call, data preparation. Our statistician will build a model for you. We'll have a model approval call. Consultant makes a visit to campus to help you with training. The advantage for all of you who are using the College Student Inventory already is that most of your folks are well aware of how to use the Data Center. So in that case, we can really focus our training not on Data Center introductions, but on planning, interventions, outreach, communication flow, what are we going to do based on what we learn. Your consultant will have regular phone and web check-ins. We design those schedules customized based for you. Some campuses are very independent, want us to stay out of their way. Some campuses want more support, and we're happy to provide that. And then we continue to work with you to collect outcomes data so that in the spring and in the fall we know what's happening with persistence and retention, and we can continue to do ongoing assessment and support your work there. So some additional case studies. Oops, I'm going to go back one moment. I think I'm going to turn this over to either Beth or Joe.
Okay,
Thank you, Lou. Before we continue to inform our communication with you after webinar, we'd ask you to complete three very brief questions using your computer keyboard. The question one is currently on the screen there. It relates to your interest in the student retention predictor that we've been discussing today. And I see many of you have already responded to that.
Joe, the question seems to be number two.
Okay, let's go back. Yes, let's first of all respond to this first question here, and that would be regarding your interest in the student retention predictor. I'll wait just a moment for you to respond here. Okay. Thank you much for those responses. And then we'll go to the second question here. It refers to your desired timeline for a discussion with one of our retention or enrollment consultants to discuss more broadly your situation, including your goals and current needs. If you'd indicate your time frame here, what's most convenient for you. Again, waiting just a moment for you to respond. Okay, thank you. And then our third question here, and our last question before we move to the question and answer session with our presenters. Many of you participating today are already using the College Student Inventory. We're always available to talk with you further, reviewing, interpreting, discussing specific strategies for student success that may have been effective on other campuses and which you may want to employ. So in this question here, if you can let us know if it would be helpful for Beth or I to give you a call to discuss your results and the accompanying strategies that might be beneficial to you. Okay, it looks like we've got some results here. And at this point then, I will turn the call back over to Beth, who will facilitate the question and answer session.
Joe, thank you for moving us through that question and answer response. If we can move forward with the slide, and then when you're ready. And Lou, I want to thank you for your clear explanations, and I want to also give strong accolades to Catherine and Kathy from Clarkson University for sharing all that they've been doing the last couple of years to serve students, and that's really what we all are driven by. At this point, I'd like to ask Kirk, the operator, to just guide us through how we can pose questions to the presenters and anything that you'd all like to talk about here. Kirk, can you just instruct us on the question?
Certainly. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And once again, in order to ask a question over the telephone, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause again. We appear to have no questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kirk. And if anyone thinks of something that they want to inquire about here in the next couple minutes, just let me know. Otherwise, I'll just refer you to a couple thoughts here as you work with your colleagues. You know, if you would like to benefit from this campus-specific retention index, if you'd like to move forward on that yet to affect this fall's incoming class, just give me a call, and we can work with you and get that contract underway and get that data readiness call going, and then build the model yet this spring to use in the academic year. I want to just point out, some of you on the phone use the ERMS, Enrollment Revenue Management System, through Noel Levitz in a different part of your campus, and if you're among that group, and I was able to call some of you, but not all. But if you're among that group, the good news is that a lion's share of your work would be done already. The data collection process for the model building is virtually complete by means of that other program. So keep that in mind. Also, I'd like to just highlight some articles that we've been writing, some white papers. We're going to post a little web page for you, a landing page, with some blogs that we thought might be of interest that my colleague Lou Sanborn has authored. But we also have our National Freshman Attitudes Report was recently released. With over 103,000 records, we have a report on the attitudes of second-year college students, working on an update to that. If you haven't read that, Attitudes and Needs of Freshmen at Mid-Year, you might want to take a look at that, as well as the benchmark report for two-year and four-year institutions. Whatever form it takes, I just want to keep the dialogue open with you. You know, we have just the highest respect for the hard work that you're doing on your respective campuses. And when you call and share your thoughts and your interventions and your goals with us, we're very honored. We hope that you can join us again on June 18th. Here we're going to be working with Missouri Western State University and Robert Morris University in Pennsylvania, and we're going to discuss retaining second-year college students with targeted interventions. In the past, we've been able to feature Fayetteville State University and University of Michigan Flint and Tulane University and Grandview University, and in that forum for second-year students. This year, we're going to feature Missouri Western and Robert Morris, so hoping we can build a crowd for that and really give some focus to thought to that that population as well. Trying to get going on a Twitter account. If anyone wants to join me, I'd appreciate it. I'm hoping that it can serve as a way to share strategies with each other. We know we have the Retention Success Journal. We know that we have our client community workshops every other year and some lunches along the way. But let's keep in touch with strategies and questions and really challenge each other to think deeply about these topics that we're trying to make an inroad with, and then share, importantly, strategies for how we can be more effective. Lou, is there anything that you'd like to add before we come to a close here today?
No, I think that's a great summary, Beth, and I would simply extend the same offer you did, that folks who are interested in continuing the conversation certainly reach out, email, phone calls, happy to connect.
Okay, wonderful. Then in that case, I'll wish all of you a wonderful afternoon, and
pardon,
please do stay in touch. Oh, Kirk, do you have a visit, a question?
Yes, I do. We have one question in queue.
And that's worth it. Yeah, please go ahead.
And your first question comes from Martha Whitley. Your line is open.
Oh. Martha,
okay.
Yes, how are you today?
Fine, Beth. We have a question. There are four of us in here listening, and we'd like for Lou or you to comment more on the capabilities of the Noel Levitts and the Starfish Connection.
Ah, okay. Lou, would you like to get started on that?
Sure. We have worked with Starfish to create a data bridge. So it's actually, I've worked with more campuses that have been Hobson's than Starfish, so my experience isn't quite as robust. But it's a very straightforward process to upload the outcomes data. So after we've scored your students, mm-hmm. you have the predictive model. It's a very simple matter to then upload those risk factors into Starfish so that you can continue to sort and use Starfish as your communication platform.
That's helpful, because we do have two partners, as you've noted there, the Starfish Retention Solutions and then Hobson's Retain. And in each case, if you go under the export function, even with just your college student inventory and mid-year student assessment data, if you go under the export function in the Retention Data Center, you'll see something called Partner Export. And that's exactly what that is for. And then it extends with the Student Retention Predictor, as I understand as well.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Martha. Any other questions now that we've kind of broken the ice here before we depart? I'd love to have a few more questions.
There are no other questions in queue at this time, but if anybody would like to ask a question, they can do so by pressing star 1 on their telephone keypad.
Thank you, Kirk.
Beth, we do have a question that was submitted online. It refers to the advising models, indicating the caller heard that there are too many advising models and questions. What were the models and what do you currently follow?
Okay, so for our Clarkson colleagues, that College of Business, that School of Business, was especially appealing, was it not, Catherine?
Yeah, I'll let Kathy take this one. She works directly with the advisors.
Sure. So at Clarkson, we have three schools, School of Engineering, School of Arts and Sciences, and the School of Business. Each school has a different advising model. Prior to Noel Levitz, the School of Engineering used only faculty advisors. The School of Business used a professional advising system, and the School of Arts and Sciences used mostly faculty advisors, although they were assigning first-year advisors from within the faculty ranks. So those are the three different models that we use. The School of the best practice was high. The School of Business was highlighted as the best practice, and so the university, the different schools have been trying to move towards something that can serve the needs of the students with designated advisors, but also within those schools there was a strong feeling that faculty should also be advisors. So they're trying to come up with a hybrid or model of some sort. But in terms of the initiatives, the campus-wide initiatives that we are now using, the Student Success Center is kind of a hub that we work with the advisors. So certainly having an advising model where there are designated advisors just helps make for more coordinated efforts.
And engineering actually did see the light a little bit in that they did hire two people to be first-year advisors for the undecided, which is called engineering studies, undecided engineering majors in the first year. Ideally, they too would like to have every first-year student have that type of advising. It gets into some cost issues, but it's a very, very large school. It's 60-some percent of our enrollments. But they did. They are learning that the School of Business model really is one that they need to emulate. It's just it's a huge culture shift in the academic side to go to that type of model.
Sure. Excellent question. What other thoughts might be on colleagues' minds? Since, you know, we're still gathered here, please feel free to, we don't have to close. We can stay on for just a couple minutes if anyone has another question. Such a nice opportunity to be together.
Excuse me. We do have another question in queue.
Your next
question comes from the line of Mary Kay from Nova Southeastern University. Your line is open.
Thank you, Mary Kay.
Well, yeah, because then she mentioned it was the dean.
Hi, Mary Kay. What's the question?
Well, I'm sorry. We didn't realize you could hear us. We didn't have one.
We typed it online.
We typed it.
Okay. Okay. Anything else then?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks for your participation from Nova Southeastern. We appreciate that. And we hope that there is robust dialogues going on around your tables as well. And we'll look forward to engaging in those conversations with you as they take form. So don't hesitate to call us at any point. And again, we'll look forward to also hopefully seeing you online and having further conversations. Thank you and have a nice afternoon.
And this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.